Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So then, Chaitanya Upanayanam, the Nyaya, Nyaya Sutras. Okay. So now continuing with the different aspects. Nyaya is the examination of an object with the help of the sources of valid knowledge, pramanas. The inference, anumana, which is not contradicted by perception and scripture, is called anvikshika. Anvikshika, anu, that which follows, iksha, knowledge. Right? So, if the inference doesn't follow what you see and what the scriptures say, it's not actually anvikshika, it's not proper. Yeah. You want one of those little funny Buddha seats?
Buddha?
The Buddha seats, you know, the one where you put your feet underneath but you sit on something so you all the weight's not under you. Yeah. A little, it's
is it
that
like a fat pillow? Or?
No. It's a wooden board. Right? I mean, it's a wooden board at an angle of 2 feet.
Oh, no. More than
that. It will not survive.
No, they work really good. Because there's no pressure on your ankles.
Yeah. That's it. Thank you. I just have to.
No, because I need to do it.
You need more pills?
To roll more of those? No, I have to roll it better.
Oh, because it has to be tighter. We can get more blankets.
No, this is good.
Because these ones are from here, they're not the classic ones. Okay, now that one.
Yeah.
You have to get it where your knees can go down.
Yeah. Because otherwise.
Problem.
We sit in here, and we, in the evening we have another 2 hours to sit.
Okay.
So it's accumulating.
Yeah. Okay, so when you have things that say like modern science, what they say is based on observation, but the things that they say you don't see as observation. There's no observance of it. So that becomes a difficulty, is that it's not actually anvikshiki. Anvikshiki means that the anuman that you use has to match with what the shastras say and what is perceived.
This is really interesting because we discussed with Mataji. I was trying to figure out epistemology, kinesiology, all those. Because by reading the definition, it wasn't clear. I don't know.
Okay.
And then Mataji explained to me, and then she mentioned that the modern science, what they do, is that the shabda they don't accept at all. There's no pramana because it's. You know, it's just face.
It's
not, exactly. So they take pratyaksha and anumana, and even between those two, they oppose each other.
Yeah.
So there are two camps basically. One is for logic, and one is for sensual experience.
Yeah.
And then they don't do well with one another. And I was thinking that at least support each other. One you already discarded, which is really stupid, but then be friends. But in academy she mentioned it's not. It's two opposite camps and fighting all the time, whether it's empirical knowledge or it's rational knowledge.
Right.
So I was thinking, like, where are we going? This is
it's crazy.
It was a very big discovery in the book of Srila Sukhothaswami Maharaj, and I realized that Yaksha and Anumana connected with each other.
Oh, you didn't know, but they had some connection.
Before I studied on the academic philosophy and they, these two schools, they're very opposite of each other.
Yeah, but I mean, you're applying anuman, or you know, on things that you've seen. You can't apply, like it says, you can't apply logic on something you have no experience of, or something you completely know.
Because they divide these two parts, they consider that, like, one of them, I forgot his name, he told that our ability to think is different from our ability to
perceive.
Okay. Yeah. What is better? Our ability to see, or our ability to perceive, and what knowledge is real.
But you can only think about what you see. You know, it's like you take that professor who's saying that. If I walk up to him, he's never seen me before, and when I walk up to him, I slap him in the face and turn around and walk off. He will think about that. And they wonder why and this and that, trying to figure where did he come from, what was the reason, what is this and that. And, you know, he'll be thinking about that slap. So the thing is, how they separate it, that's a difficulty that comes up, is they see the discipline on its own, completely isolated from everything else. When nature that they're observing is not like that, it's perfectly blended. That means all the disciplines should agree with each other. Since they don't, that means they don't actually understand the laws of nature. They say, no, by the laws of nature, then you have this. They're not understanding. Otherwise, they would see, why is it different? You know, so all the schools are studying one thing from different angles, but there's commonality. Like we discussed this microphone here, and the stand and all that, then we can discuss it, let's say, from how well it works. You know, is it a good machine? Does it do the job? What kind of work it does? You know, like that. Or we can look at it how practical it is in the way of using it. Because it may work great, but it's not. I remember seeing in recording studios, I mean, this is back in the 60s, you don't have anymore. They had this little machine. It was maybe, like, from what I remember, it was about, yeah, maybe 30 centimeters by 40 centimeters, and maybe 15, 16 centimeters tall. In that, you put the recording reels. Then you took the tape, and instead of it going down like normal ones, so it goes down, goes across the head, you know, that and going to the other one, it went through all over the place. It went through like 15, 20 different things before it got to the thing. And they all had springs on them and this and that. And it was this very complicated thing. So as far as ease of use, it's not easy to use at all. But if you talk about quality, it's the absolute best in the world at the time. You know, so depending on what you're looking for. You want something for your kid to use, don't get that. You may be rich, but don't get it for your kid. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So these kind of things, or we could look at it from how nice it looks. Because sometimes they make these practical things, they don't look good. But then you see when you get into the very top ones, they have to look good because you have to follow nature and how the energies work. So nature is very beautiful, how it moves. So they have to make things, and so then it becomes nice because it follows the what do you call it? The form follows the function to such a refined degree. You know what I'm saying? So you can have that, or we could look at the cost. You know, for this cost, it's the best microphone you can get. But at the same time, it's not in any way near the best microphone. You know, because I mean, we don't need to spend, you know, let's say $100,000 on a microphone for recording this class. But they have microphones like that. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen where they do these big philharmonic orchestras and all that. You look up in the ceiling, way up in the sky, there's two microphones. Only two. And two, I think they're like shotgun microphones. Two, hanging, suspended in the air. Little dinky things. Like that. But that gives the absolute best. So you don't want to know how much those cost. And so we have so many, but it's still about the sound and the usage and all that. We're just taking the different angles of it. So therefore, science is studying material nature. It's one thing. So why should all these branches be opposed to each other in their theories?
If we only basis of pratyaksha, then we can think only about this material world and we don't see an ideal world. But if we have another method, we can think that maybe ideal world exists or not. That's why they all of this discussion was about who are right, people who speak about the ideal world and who speak
about, speak about this. But in any case, ideal world means dealing with what you see. Do they want that to just be in their mind and not engage the senses? Right? We'll put them into this white room in a white chair, white clothes. We'll even do their face up with the white, white
mask.
Powder, yeah, or like that, or mask. Yeah, you get one of those ones, the ones with the smile on it, that one. So then, and there's nothing in there, nothing, and just either it's bright or completely dark, no sound, no nothing, nothing to touch, and we'll just run things through their mind. Will they be happy? How long can they do that for? You know, have you ever eaten a meal in your mind when you're hungry, or gone to the toilet in your mind when you have to go to the toilet? I mean, it's called dreams, but
yeah.
And the fun part is, I had sort of that. You walk into the toilet, you turn around, close the door. When you turn back to the toilet, you're out somewhere else. You're out in the field. You're on a road. You're in the market. It always disappears. It's unattainable and can't. Yeah. So you know what I'm saying? So they'd be happy with that? No, it has to be real here. So they have to deal with the world. So if their anuman doesn't work with the world, what's the point of it? At the same time, as if the world doesn't work according to some thought, what distinguishes them from the animals? So why is it has to be two? And how can they understand something beyond? So unless they've heard from Shastra, what's beyond? Because you say it's ideal, but how are you defining the ideal? Everybody will have their different ideas. So you have to have an absolute standard. Right? So therefore, Socrates, you have to bring your... What you see has to be brought in line with the absolute. Therefore, the anuman is there to see how that works. So you have to have all three. You can't function on just... Right? It means if you know Shastra, but you can't apply it, it's not a science. So science means you have all of that, and it is applicable. So therefore, all these utopian theories, it's never been seen to be applied. And people have tried, right? China's have tried, Russia's tried, Cuba's tried, Nicaragua's tried. Yeah, it's unattainable. And of course, you have the standard Shangri-La over in your part of the world. You know Shangri-La?
Shangri-La.
Is that how it's
spelled?
It's pronounced over there.
Yeah,
Shangri-La. You know?
Yeah, it's in the Himalayas, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're on the other side. You go Himalayas and come down the other side. It's the other side. So it's over there somewhere. And that one is like, who gets to see it? One guy. He even told his friends, nobody came. Right? And even they had some problems, I think, and so he had to go back and straighten it out.
In fact, we have now in university one professor from Moscow, he studied in Moscow. All of our countries, Moscow School of Philosophy, considered most logic. And all our universities respected him as most logical professor of all. They gave him the book of Scott Simon as a shadow of reality. And when he read it, he thought, I have nothing to say. It's completely impossible.
It's completely?
Logic.
Okay.
He didn't believe, but he didn't
He didn't have anything to say because it's beyond his experience. Yeah. So you can understand how smart Sahota Maharaj was.
Oh, that's why he couldn't say anything. You cannot apply logic on something that you have no experience.
No, yeah, no experience. It's just beyond it. He can see the logic of it. He can see the mechanical logic, but he has nothing to.
He has no tools.
No tools. Okay. Yeah. So that at least that's an honest answer. Mm. You know. So they might give it that to you privately, but publicly they can't, you know, say those things. Otherwise, then their whole everything goes down the tube. Okay. This branch of knowledge is called Anvikshika, Anvikshiki, or Nyaya Vidya, or Nyaya Shastra. These are all different ways it's mentioned. Because it is propagated for the discussion of Anvikshika. Right? So it means that which follows knowledge. Right? So you have knowledge of the sense, and you have knowledge of the Shastra. So following that, then you can make the connection. It means Shastra says this, I'm in this situation, how do I apply Shastra in my situation? So you know your situation, you know what the Shastra said. Then the Anuman is there, how to make it work for you. So that's then you go through the process of Tarka, you analyze, okay, do I get up at midnight and do this and that and all that, and then I found that, you know, then the problem is sleeping all day, so then, you know, maybe I should do this or that. You analyze the whole things until you see what works for your situation. Because it works for you, the next guy it doesn't work at all. Does that make sense? You know, one guy gets up early, chances all his rounds, the other guy stays up late at night, chances all his stuff. Whichever works for them, it works. The inference, which is contradicted by either perception or scripture, is pseudo-nyaya and doesn't count as anvikshiki. Footnote 5. Example of such pseudo-nyaya is wine, sura, is to be drunk by the Brahmin because it is a liquid, as for example, milk. You know? So people use that kind of stuff. These modern bogus gurus and all these other, you know, so many, you know, things, they use these things. And people buy it because they're not so smart. I can't remember who came up with it, but it was in America, I think back in the 20s or 30s or something. The saying was, there's a sucker born every minute. Sucker means, you know, someone who's naive that you can trick. You know? Yeah. So, and the guy made millions. He was one of the richest people. I can't remember who it was. It was one of the biggest, you know, whatever it is, corporates or industrialists or something, or a stock market or something, because he knew. There's means, you know, one guy may figure it out, but then there's another idiot. You know, it's just like we go online and buy stuff and it's junk. You won't buy it anymore, but there's another, you know, what is it, 1.4 billion people in India who will give it a try. So. Yeah. Well, they're the ones that make it.
They also buy it.
Do they? That one thing I'm not sure is that just like I asked something about clickers, right? And you get the local clickers. They last me. They can either they don't get out of the gate. I get it new and I check it. It doesn't even properly work. Or they may last 3 days. Or 5 days, or if it lasts a week or 10 days, it's like, ooh. She just brought some, and they work so much better. From they're from China, but they're at the same company. Just somehow or another, they're selling their really junk stuff here and the better stuff over at her place. You know, in other words, the stuff they sell here costs 27. You know. Cents, and the ones that are over in her place cost 50 cents.
They say, no, it's about India. Whatever is good, they goes for export.
Yeah.
And whatever is stays here.
Stays here, yeah. And then people fight over the best quality. It's like the crows fighting over the best quality garbage. No.
In China, probably, no,
there? I don't know. I can't remember. I bet everything worked for me over there. Everybody looks good. Everyone has the latest stuff. But it's not brand.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because in China they make everything for the rest of the world. So everyone is wearing designer clothes, but they're not wearing designer brand. You know, so everyone's got the smartphone, but it's not, you know, it's not the ones that are there. It's the ones that they make and sell them there. You know, so and everything's, you know, easily available, cheap.
A stand-up comedian made a comment: when an Indian goes to a Chinese mall,
okay.
The Chinese guy, he doesn't want to give 1 cent less, and the Indian guy will not purchase without bargaining. So it's a never-ending thing.
Oh, it is. And a friend, he was in Singapore, and there you have the markets are Chinese. So the guy goes in there and he starts bargaining with him over it. The guy's kind of like, what? He's a Western. He's bargaining, you know, like that. And they're going on and on and on. And then finally when he drove him down to a price he was comfortable with and the other guy wasn't ripping his hair out, then he says, you know, they were arguing over the one he pulled off the shelf. He says, but this one people have been touching. I want a fresh one from the back. And the guy just looked at him and said, you're Indian. I said, no, I'm not an American. He's my pastor. No, you're Indian. Only Indians do this. So he was freaking out. So that's exactly like that. Yeah, so that's it. In India, all the junk stays here and they export all the good stuff. In China, they keep all the good stuff and export all the junk.
Not only for India, though.
Yeah, because India will buy junk, use junk, so. Yeah. Yeah, because here is also, you see it, it's because here you're taking liquid, wine and liquid and milk. So that's also the jati, where you're using the same generality. It means in the group. That means same context. So you're saying it's all liquid. So since Brahmins drink milk, which is liquid, then they can also drink wine, which is liquid. But that's jati, where you're misapplying the liquid here. Because it's quality of liquid. So you're taking something that has a specific detail, taking it back to a generality, you know, that, you know, within the thing, and then taking it back out to the detail again. And so then it becomes yeah, so that's not a real yeah, because you don't see that. The scriptures don't say it. You don't see the Brahmins doing that. And so. The sutra next mentions corroborative or familiar illustration, drishtanta. Corroborative, I think, where you corroborate, where you make it match. Make corroboration means making it match. Yeah. Or familiar illustration means it's got to be corroborative, means it has to be the situation that is being applied to has to match with what is being explained. Right? So you have the scripture, you're saying something, and you have the situation that the person that you're explaining it to is in. So you have to corroborate those two. But, as is mentioned here, it has to be a familiar illustration because the person you're applying it to, unless he has a connection with something, he can't apply logic. So unless the example matches his mentality or experience, it doesn't work. Like remember...
You say it's relevant.
It's relevant, yes. But it has to be familiar to him. Like, remember before we had that one Mataji? She was in a class, she was like a tomboy?
Yeah.
A long time ago. And then when you'd say something to her and you'd use a feminine example, it wouldn't make any sense to her at all. Like that. And so you had to use something that, you know, the boys around where she grew up would be into. And as soon as you said that, it made sense. She just didn't catch it. She had no samskar for it. So she must have like grown up with 10 brothers, you know, out in the country or something like that. So everything went the way they with them. And so she just grew up there, did everything, thought like that, did everything, all her experiences with that. So if you said anything to do with how generally ladies would look at stuff, it meant nothing to her. So you had to give an example that was relevant to her. You couldn't use a nice car. It had to be like a truck. Then it made sense. You know, if you said, you know, which car you buy, the one that looks nice, it's kind of like, no, the one that works the best. So then you say, you have to buy the truck that works, what work you want to do. And then it's okay. Then she, so that's the, that's, and when that happens, when they understand it, that's drishtanta. So drishtanta isn't the illustration or the example or that. It's that realization they get from using that process. So drishtanta is the process of making, giving that realization through using example. It's not the example. So, yeah. A corroborative illustration, drishtanta, is the perception of an object on which an ordinary man, lokika, and an expert, parikshaka, entertain the same opinion. Right? So the person who knows and the person who doesn't know, there's something common that they both have the same understanding. So then it has to work. But also it says it has to be the same understanding. So you can't give an example, let's say, in their area where you understand it one way, they understand it in another. It has to be something where it's common. So that's what we were always talking before. That's preaching. Is getting that drishtanta has to be used to get it across. That becomes preaching. Hard preaching means I use an example that works for me in a situation, but it doesn't work for the other person. Right? And so then I'm pushing that. That would be what is generally labeled as hard preaching. You know, we know Krishna consciousness, we preach straight Krishna consciousness, but they have no accessibility to it, so it doesn't make sense to them. Or soft preaching is where it's just about the person there, but it has nothing to do with what I know. So there's no common point. So you have to find a common point where they can they in their position can understand how Krishna consciousness applies to them. That's preaching. So either soft or hard, they don't work because it's not preaching. If it's working, it's preaching. If it's not working, it's not preaching. Because you can say whatever you want out the heart, so many people join. And some people, when they apply the soft, they get so many people. But because that means, in other words, the one is working on conviction. He's saying the things, it's logical how he says it, the other person doesn't understand what he's talking about, but it's logical and he's convinced, and that makes an impression. Because he hasn't seen other people that are logical and convinced. So then they get interested. And the other one, he focuses on what will they'll relate to. And so because you're making it personal for them, they relate to that because who's been personal? Right? But the actual standard is in between those two. It's that you have to take what the expert is saying and make it accessible to the person who doesn't know. That's logic. That's the drishtanta. So that's what udaharana is for. The third stage. It's to do this. Because you've made your statement. They may understand or not, but you have to make it accessible. That's drishtanta. Even if they have a doubt or a stink, you're using all those same things, the examples and all that, to make it accessible to them. That's why it stays as udaharana. Even though the interaction, we may call it vishaya, samshaya, purva paksha, uttara, and all that, it's just, but it's still, you're trying to accomplish the same thing. It's the still, that drishtanta, if it doesn't happen, no one understood. Does that make sense?
This is a difficulty when you preach to audience with different backgrounds.
Yeah, mixed.
They don't have the same frame of reference.
Yeah.
So then examples, it's really difficult. This is why I figured out. Then we can go through the same material with the Russian audience. You know, post-Soviet Union audience basically. Now it's all divided, but the frame of reference more or less the same. So what we used to cover like 7-8 months, we can cover within 5 months. Because the frame of reference is established.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like, for example, you know, preach to North Indian audience, it goes fairly smooth and quickly.
Chalega.
And they can relate. But if it's mixed audience, like you had all those years, you know, and basically one or two Americans were there, and but everybody else to understand, it took like 3 years.
Oh, 3 years. Okay. I remember someone else took it. Oh, maybe it was the with a Chinese professor.
Oh yeah,
I think he
Siddhadeha.
Yeah, Siddhadeha. Somebody says, I don't know, says this. Don't worry, it took me 2 years. Oh, okay. But once there's the common ground, then it makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, but people usually don't last that long. Because who can just sit there for like so long?
So now, was it that you sat, if you sit there long enough, it makes sense. But were you sitting there because it was just, you know, you went out for a walk and didn't feel like walking back yet, and so you just wanted to sit for a little longer, and so then just after 3 years of that, then you understood? Or, you know?
No, I was actually afraid of her.
Oh.
If I leave, well, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know.
Social pressure.
Okay.
Through anamaya and pranamaya.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Okay. It's more difficult to teach to more young audience than here, because for old people, we can give some examples from those movies which we saw before Krishna consciousness, but for children, we don't know which examples to give because we can't see them.
Oh, it's so different. And someone was explaining, or I see an article or something, that because you have all these different search engines and all these different things that work, they all work on these algorithms. And so the algorithm is set for you. And so each person, you can have a whole bunch of people sitting together looking at the same things, but because of the algorithm, where it will take them is completely different. So what they're experiencing, you don't know. You can't necessarily give an example. You have to pull it back and make it very general. You know, because, so, yeah. I noticed that from 2010, the examples and everything I used didn't work anymore. Before that, I could say whatever I'd use, they would be either contemporary ones or they would be old, you know, classic, you know, even ancient, and they would work. But starting from 2010, none of those classic or ancient ones worked anymore. And contemporary, every 6 months it changes, so.
I spoke with my daughter and I said, mentioned something. I saw it on Facebook. She said, that's such an old thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Instagram is, but even Instagram is the one just down from that. Then I think the Snapchat or something, or some other ones are way down now.
Yeah.
You know, so it means whichever one you could slot in, you keep using that. So the people that came into it maybe in their 20s, but now they're in their 40s, but they're still using Facebook. And so the young people don't slot into
there. Yeah, what are you doing on this Facebook? What are you doing on Instagram?
Because it's instant. The other one, you know, so it takes longer.
You can read a little bit.
Yeah.
You can still read.
Yeah, you can still have an article or something. It's not on the videos.
Yeah, or they have those, what's the tweets? They can't be anything more than 144 characters.
Yes.
That means that's the word. So you use a big word, you've used up half of your characters. You know, so you get 2-3 words and you're done.
Sutra?
Yeah, I guess you get to use my sutras. Yeah, then you have to learn the language and all that. Because then they use all the short.
That's why it's not that much anymore.
Oh, okay. You have to think. Oh, okay. Yeah, so the experiential goes down. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, these are fun. I mean, because everybody I knew was using Facebook, and so I thought, yeah, Facebook. And then it was a younger audience, and I mentioned it, and then they brought it up. No. So it's only
old people.
And it's not even, you know, someone more mature. No, it's old people, right?
Yes.
If you're above 30, you're old.
No, but my son would say, you know, I'm on Facebook because old people use it. And then the next one, he said, but I'm sending emails because really old people are
really old people.
Really old.
And then I sent a letter because, you know, mummies use that.
They were like, really old people.
Yes. 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 That's fine.
Therefore, in the team, it's good to have all the ages, all the groups, so then they can really distribute the knowledge.
That's so far out. So far out.
Otherwise, you only targeting certain audience, and it's
No, that's very good. Remember, see, when I went, I'm still be back in the, it's like 90s and that, and that we'd get invited to these Pandavasena programs. And these Pandavasena programs were college kids in college. And they were devotees, so they got together and that, but they're still going to college, they're still on campus. But it breaks and holidays, they get together and go somewhere and, see things and invite, senior devotees and all this. And so it was there. But it took a long time before I noticed that the same group was inviting me over years, but it's in the 2000s, so it's been a long time, but they're still the same group, and they're still the youth and all that, and they're all married, they got kids and all this and that. And I noticed that there weren't that many younger people around. Generally they were like relatives or their own kids, because they didn't do what you were saying. They didn't introduce those and let them run it, and just they kind of oversee and be the mentors. They stayed being the active ones controlling it, and so they weren't pulling in the newer people.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting how quickly it was. Because before, the things went, means everybody's together. So, dinner meant you sat down the whole family, so you had all three or four generations there. But now, nobody does that. That's for old people.
But previously, the generation would change, then everything would change. Mm-hmm. Now, during the generations, everything. And there's lots of gaps, even from younger parents to their kids.
But you probably will see is that what she's talking about, there's people that are doing something, more up to date than her.
No, yeah. Because they say you are the millennium generation, you are the me generation, they go with all those terms.
Indigo generation.
Indigo?
Still they go.
Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
I know the me generation, they're the ones that are still on the top of the society now. And then the millennials are kind of in the middle. When are millennials born?
Millennium.
The
2000s. Oh, from there. Oh, I thought millennial went back into the 90s. Oh, it has to be that they're born in that. Okay. Yeah, so then you have ones down in the 90s, 80s, that they're kind of more, and then he comes up and like that. Yeah.
They are those real old people.
Yeah. The fun thing is that this modern thing is supposed to be more inclusive, more international, but they're more and more segregated into their own little groups. It's before it was the cool kids and the not cool kids. But now then you had so many. You had the cool kids, and then you had the intellectuals, the nerds, and you had the goths, and then you had the this, and you had the that. And now it's like within each system. And the fun part is they sincerely think, like Madhu was saying about the idealism, they sincerely think that they're thinking on a global level when they're not. And it's so narrow. Yes?
In this, it was a problem, when I was interacting with many kinds of people. But if you need to understand something really of any culture or any generation, if we catch the core logic in it,
okay,
without just the stunt aspect putting aside, right, then it becomes easy to catch the structure.
Okay.
Just like Atma Puttuvi, he said math is about logic. Math is logic.
Okay. Yes.
So there is a principle how it works, and the structure remains like 2 plus 2 is 4, it's 4. Every time.
Wait. 2 plus 2 is 4. I thought it was 22. Go ahead.
So that kind of logic, when somebody catches it, and like all these, the guys who make all these new technologies and all, if you see in their computer what they use, it will be like, the ones they prefer are the oldest ones.
Yeah.
Because they know that works as it is, like, there is no addition, there is nobody else interpretation on it.
That's interesting.
And then we take it back, then the Vedanta is that is the straight, direct descending one. It remains as it is. It never changes. So even our drishtantas and all, it's good that we get people to some extent.
But you have to know how to
But take then it. We have to make them connect to the Vedantic interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what misses most of the times. They connect and they're like very good for the first few years, and after that they cannot relate to it anymore because they didn't connect to the descending one.
They didn't know how to think. Ah, okay. That's very good. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It means taking that drishtanta as a principle, going into it, what you're talking about.
Should bring to the siddhanta, basically, and that siddhanta should remain.
Yeah, because if they catch that, then Okay. It is included, of course, in the objects of valid knowledge, prameya. Still, it is mentioned separately because of the basis of inference and helps in elucidating the verbal testimony, agama. By the substantiation of the drishtanta, one's own position is well established, and by showing the contradiction in the opponent's drishtanta, the position of the opponent can be declared as refuted. Right? So he's showing what it is and why it's there. Because if you just say, oh, it's within that, within the prameyas, then the problem comes up, or drishtanta, is that you won't look at it and try to establish, you use it. So it's separately given because it needs to be used. You have to be able to show how what you're saying by illustration is working, what they're saying by illustration doesn't work. And then, as Prabhu mentioned here, is that understanding what is the basis of how they're thinking. You know, like that, then that makes it, then you know how to apply the example so they take it all the way through. So it's not just enough that it's like, if you're saying that professor, you know, was a big, you very logical, but he had no entrance into it. He can see that it's logical, and he could find no fault in it, but he couldn't comment or accept it because he couldn't get through to how he thinks. Does that make sense?
Also, the thing with Eric, recently I was explaining one boy, he's already turned 14 or 15, but it's like doing the stuff that 10-year-old does, and then he's having some problem. And I explained a method which is more quick, but little bit more complicated. When you heard this, why I never heard this method? So he was like, in one sense, very disturbed that this method, if I was taught before, it would have been so easy. And I said, no, if I would have explained that when you are 8 or 9, you can make no sense out of it, because your mind is not developed to see two or three contradictory things at the same time. And the same thing, the whole philosophy, Vedic philosophy also, initially it appears very complex because the culture is included, how you see, and but once you connect, it's like very quick and straightforward.
Very easy.
Yeah.
If the skeptic, Gnostica, admits a corroborative illustration, he has to surrender his skepticism. If he does not admit any, how can he silence his opponent? Footnote 6. This shows the prima facie impossibility of maintaining the position of the extreme nihilist, sarva shunyata vadi. Okay, so this is the extreme Buddhists. Mm-hmm. We said there's those four schools. Because
yes.
A lot of times you'll see in his examples he's addressing Buddhists.
Oh. Vatsyayanas
in his commentary.
Oh, really? Gautama was before Buddhists.
Buddhists were not there.
Or Vatsyayana.
Vatsyayana is the commentary who we're reading now.
Okay.
But the philosophy of Buddhism is always there.
Okay.
That they are called Nyayakas. Or these are called the Nyayakas. What is it called?
Nihilists.
No. There's another word. Gnosticas. The Gnosticas and
Gnosticas.
The atheistic kind of. So, and the skeptical, skepticism and atheism. So, Gautama wrote all his sutras to basically address that. That mentality is always there, and Buddhists only became prominent by using it as a tool, but their main purpose to attack the opponents is they are performing adharma by killing animals.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a positive, what do you call, there is a higher principle, but the philosophy, everybody takes shelter of some of the philosophy that's already existing and it becomes prominent.
That's interesting, because you mentioned that, is that when Buddha went out and preached, he would catch these top Brahmins who would naturally be, you know, logic and all that, so then they would, like you're saying, use the logic, but then, you know.
But yeah, then because they are performing a adharma, which is the lower principle, then based on that, then you can, you have a, what you call, a higher goal. Then this logic, then you give it up.
Yeah.
Because the logic is for attaining some goal. So then other logic makes sense.
Get him on the sentiment. Okay. Literally, one according to whom everything is void. For he does not admit the reality of any object that may serve as a corroborative illustration. As such, he cannot argue even for the purpose of refuting his opponent. On the other hand, if he admits the reality of the object mentioned as a corroborative illustration, he has to surrender his fundamental position of extreme nihilism. Right. Because there's nothing, so there's nothing, you can't give an example on nothing. Right? So if he admits that this example will work to establish the point, then he has to surrender that there's not absolute in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So this way or the other, he's defeated.
Yeah.
He has to give up his arguments.
Even the Sarvastivadi Buddhist cannot satisfactorily offer any drishtanta, either in defense of his own position or in refutation of his opponent. He claims everything to be momentary, kshanika. Therefore, by the time he mentions an object as his drishtanta, the object itself has ceased to exist, and something which is non-existing cannot be a drishtanta. On the other hand, if for the sake of his drishtanta he admits any permanent object, he has to surrender his basic doctrine of momentariness. You know, so it's just, you get down to the fundamental, that's where you get. You know, as we were saying, that you get into these different groups, they have something that they're specifically based on, and their whole mentalities are around that. So if you get that, you know, it's like when we're dealing with the Mayavadis, you get into, okay, there's only Brahman, there's nothing else, and then Maya covers a portion of Brahman, then you get the Jiva. So it's an illusion that the Jiva exists, right? It seems logical, but what they left out in this step is, where did that Maya come from if there's only Brahman?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a pastime of Brahman, then why are you making such a big deal out of it? You know? And that means it's Brahman is being covered, so Brahman's doing that, so it's a pastime. So what's the big deal? Brahman wants to do a pastime, well, who are you to get away? So the point is this Maya has to come from somewhere. If there's only Brahman, but how does it come? Because we say Brahman is unchanging, this is changing. And then by covering it, then Brahman changes into Jivas, that's changing, so that means it can't be Brahman. So you have to be dealing with something that Brahman stays at his place, but the same thing, everything is Brahman. So that's only when you acknowledge that there are Shaktis of Brahman, then everything can be put into place and all doubts are answered. And as long as they don't do that, their philosophy is extremely weak. It's only because people are foolish and they want to be God, they want to be this, they want to, you know, give up, they want to be freed from suffering, therefore they accept it. It's due to their own attachments. But as far as logic goes, it doesn't, it's just a Vedic Shastric. It's a form of Buddhism that it bases on Shastra. That's all. But otherwise, it's the same thing. So once you get to that level, you go through to that level, then you unravel everything that they have. So it doesn't matter what their detail they're into. You know that this group has that kind of thing. And once you, you know, it's like a shoelace. Once you pull on that little string, your shoe falls off. So, yeah. Prove doctrine, Siddhanta, right, because that's the next one, is included in the topics of valid knowledge. Still, it is separately mentioned because Vada, Jalpa, and Vitanda are employed only when there is difference among the proved doctrines, not otherwise. Siddhanta means the establishment of the true nature of an object. Dharma, Niyam. Right? So you establish, that's why Prabhupada says, the soul is servant. Once you establish that, that's the real nature. You know, so he'll explain things, give example and everything. Then when that's understood, then you see is then you can, now it's been established, it's Siddhanta. Now he can talk on that. Like I was noticing today, Prabhupada was discussing about God, you know, and our position and this and that. Then he gets to that point of God, then he mentions about, you know, the name. It's non-different. So God, name and non-different. Then he establishes that Krishna's of all the names, then Krishna is the most important. Because it means they're all attractive. Everyone's attractive. And then from then on, he only uses the term Krishna. Because right? Once you've established, then you can move on that. So he just goes out, you know, that the, you know, the material life is a problem, then it has to be, you know, connected with the Supreme, that's the only solution. Then goes through, then he shows Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And then he gets to the name, then he gets to Krishna. And then he's talking about devotion and all those things. But, you know, the devotion's there all the way through, but then he just goes in a very nice logical order. So he's establishing one thing after another. You establish that proof doctrine, then you move on to the next one, and the next one. You know, until you're getting to what is the final one you're trying to get. Each of the five propositions, namely Pratigya, etc., with which the desired thesis is conclusively established, Siddhi Pari Shamyapyate, is called component of inference, Avayava. Right, so that's the Panchaganyaya. Right? The four pramanas are collectively present in these five components. Right? So it says, with the thesis is conclusively established. So that's the point, is you have the thesis, but it's through these avyayas, or avayavas, that you establish it. So that's why it's one of the 16, but it's the one that you use to establish them all. Right? And so that you want to establish means you're going to have a discussion in the Vada. You're trying to find the Siddhanta. You know, but it has to be based on the Shastra. Come on. You have to be discussing things that are proven by the Shastra. Right? And so that's the Pramayas. Does that make sense? So it becomes the you could say in that way, the actual technique by which the 16 are used. You know, it becomes the framework of all of them, because the logic is on there. Sometimes they even call that a logic. And they don't have the sutra, the Adhikaranas. And that means it's the avayavas.
I think Vatsyayana Gautama, he said it's called Nyaya par excellence.
Yeah.
Only when this is applied. It's like
Yeah, that is Prabhupada. And Prabhupada also quoting Bhaktisiddhanta says when Prabhupada then says that in this Vaishnava circles, then they always use this avayavas, the Panchanga Nyaya. That's proper. That's the Vaishnava standard. Like that. And he's quoting Bhaktisiddhanta says. So you see in Prabhupada's purports, they follow it. You know, the acharyas, they always do. And so it's just, but because they're so poetic, it doesn't come out as textbook. You know, it's like, because how they'll use the wording and how they're bringing it, because depending upon the situation, the audience, what they're trying to bring out, they're not trying to make it that the logic is the reason. They're using the logic, but you're appreciating what's there. Does that make sense? You know, Prabhupada's talking to new people who don't know anything, and he's using all these technical things because that's what works. But when he speaks, you'll think he's speaking very simply. It's just like, you know, we listen to these lectures a few times, and only because we're going through these technical things and going through the Siddharvas, and you start to see the logic, then you start to see Prabhupada's using it. This is just what I'm catching now. You know, and as you keep going and go through and you know more of them, you see, like only today I noticed Prabhupada is going from one, you know, how you say, I don't know what you call it, but you know, like Sambandhavi Deva Prayojana or Nine Processes or Shraddha de Prema or these, huh? Yeah, one of these, you know, these philosophical concepts where it's like an outline or, you know, it has that, I think he's going from one to the next. I never saw that before. You know, I caught, you know, okay, Sambandhavi Deva, but I never caught how within that he's using it. And then once he established, just now, because we mentioned it here, about once it's established, then it's there, then you can move on. Because then I know that that's what Prabhupada did. Because I noticed before that he didn't mention Krishna. Then at this point he mentioned Krishna. After that he didn't. He only referred to Krishna. But he had to establish it, because if I say Krishna, who's Krishna? Why that's a Hindu god, this, that. He's already established God. Now you've established God, now you can establish, you know, the name. Because you've established the name, now you can still about this name. Now no one's going to ask. So it's just so logically presented. And this was, you know, just through, you know, a general group. You know, I don't remember where it was. I don't remember if this was, you know, a general audience in Hyderabad or if this was in Sweden. You know, so.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.